Donald in a Kitchen talks about food. Donald in a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donald in a Kitchen. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
This is the Donald in a Kitchen, and we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. Our friend Marcus at the Mucky Duck Pub. The Donald in a Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For more information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus.
Very good. We gather here once a week at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, and we talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. We have lots of summer left, and we had a nice little rain shower last night, which we needed immensely.
Oh, what a burst of,
It was good.
It was a burst.
I've been doing things like picking beans, and I've been cooking down some crab apple jelly and crab apple applesauce. And in my quest to find out more about good things in Ames, I've been kind of sampling ice cream around. And this last week, I had a red grapefruit gelato at Chocolaterie Stomme on Main Street.
Love grapefruit gelato.
And red, was that ever nice? So that's my cold thing of the week.
Refreshing.
Thumbs up for that. What did you do this weekend, Donna?
It's Tuesday. I can't even remember the weekend already. What did we do? Actually, we did. We went to Cornbread last night for dinner.
Very good.
And
a lovely local restaurant.
The pitmaster gleefully announced his very exciting new brunch menu, which is only on Sundays because it is a humdinger. I'm going to be there next Sunday.
Good food, good food.
Yes, very clever, creative menu.
Also, I wish to report that we've had an interesting weather year this year, gardening. I've been spending a lot of time outside, usually just in sandals, and this has been an amazing chigger year for any folks that wonder why am I itching in a very unpleasant place? These little things get in and migrate to things like your underwear because they like warm, they like moist.
Oh yeah, the little tight spots. My mother used to say.
Yeah, and you don't notice it till a couple hours after you're inside. Boy, oh boy.
Now is this an old wives' tale that you paint clear fingernail polish over the chigger bits because that suffocates the bites?
That does work. However,
something easier?
There's something at the go to your local pharmacy and kind of say, I've got chiggers, and they will tell you they have a proper product. Kind of a little creamy thing that has it's very not minty but eucalyptusy or smells kind of strong.
Does it just take away the itch, or does it actually? Because it's not like a mosquito bite. No. They go on for a few days.
It does work pretty darn well. Not immediately, in an hour or two. I don't know what it does to them, but I've been slathering.
Okay, so there's a solution to
chiggers,
this problem.
Chiggers. Okay. Oh, my goodness. Well, we've covered that subject. So today on the show, we're going to be talking about hemp, dragons, and jam and jelly. Yes, I said dragons. We'll get around to that shortly. We have a news item from the Donald in a Kitchen News Department. Tick a tick tick a tick tick a tick. That's the Donald in a Kitchen ticker tape. Donna, what do you have to share with us today?
Oh, is this the hemp story?
This is the hemp story.
Oh, okay. Okay, there was an article in the Kansas City Star.
Bah!
So I've kind of been watching this hemp CBD thing as, you know, I'm kind of an amused old hippie about the whole thing, kind of been there, done that. But there are some new things coming, and the best thing is from various forms of legalization means we will have more research. So as an agricultural product, this has been kind of silly of us Americans. For about a decade or two decades, we've been importing. We're not talking about the kind that you get high from. This is hemp. We've been importing a lot of it from Canada because there are hemp clothing products, hemp shoes, hemp food, and of course we can't grow any of it in this country, but that law changed in the last agricultural bill. Huh? It is now legal to grow hemp. That is not marijuana, but hemp is federally legal to grow. So,
and it's not like hemp has been reading the rules. Hemp grows wild in quite a few places.
Yeah, ditchweed, we used to call it when I was a kid. It grows all over. And actually, it was grown extensively during World War II because it has so many industrial and war-related uses. It's a very useful product. So, anyway, there was an article in the Kansas City Star. So these things that I'm going to talk about are what's happening in our, you know, in Kansas. And apparently Missouri is also instituting something for next year. It's the federal regulation did specify that it was up to the states. And this is true also for the THC getting high kind of marijuana thing, too. But the hemp part, actually a big push for hemp began to grow it agriculturally began in Kentucky because it is a crop that is easy to replace for tobacco farmers who have lost their livelihood. So it has been championed from Kentucky, and surprisingly enough, you know, Mitch McConnell, because of the pressure from his home state and the logic of the whole thing and the economic feasibility of it, was, you know, the case was made and it actually passed. And I think this is a good idea. So here's from the Kansas City Star. They're saying planting it's called industrial hemp, just became legal to grow in the U.S. because the changes in the farm bill with the states regulating. And they're saying, of course, as we know, low commodity prices and trade conflicts have fueled an increasing interest in farmers who are not doing well. I mean, it started with the tobacco farmers who had a huge economic bump in their road there. But now the corn and soy farmers are having the same problems here in Iowa. So though I'm reading about Kansas, I'm reading this to our Iowa audience because I think it's something we need to consider. There is also the exploding hemp CBD market. So just to keep this straight, cannabis is a plant that produces multiple cannabinoids, which are chemical constituents in the plant. Now, one of them, called THC, is the one that gets you high. Now, apparently that has some medical uses also, but it is highly regulated. It is not legal to grow yet. There's still, you know, that is a possibility, but it's not a certitude. But the plant that is actually known as industrial hemp has very minuscule amounts of THC, and there is a regulated amount that's acceptable. But it also has a lot of CBD, which is another cannabinoid that has become very interesting for its uses in, like, pain reduction, anti-inflammatory,
Parkinson's.
The thing is, we need more research, more. It is, in Iowa now, both of those products are available through a medical dispensary, and there's quite a legal process. But if you have the appropriate medical condition in Iowa, you are actually able to get it. I know there's a dispensary in, Des Moines, for example. You must have a doctor's approval for this, but it you know, we're giving it a try somewhere. So in Kansas, there were 200 growers this year. The state has a heavily regulated inaugural program. So hemp, this is industrial hemp, you can make concrete out of it. It's used for fabric, for fuel, food. Like some of the natural food stores, you can have hemp oil, which is supposedly, well, we don't know exactly what the medicinal claims are, but there's something. It tastes very pleasant. Hemp seed.
It's high in protein.
Yes, it is high in protein. Like, I actually recently bought a ground hemp seed jar that I put in my smoothies. It has fiber, too. So hemp has a lot of uses, and it does grow very well in many climates, and it's actually apparently much better for the soil than, say, corn and soybeans. So, and it grows fast and produces a lot of fiber. Cynthia has something to say.
It could be used as the row crops that are buffer zones that are regulated by, you know, you got to keep your crops away from the water. So you could, they,
yes,
farmers could grow hemp in between those zones.
Yeah. It's an annual crop. So here's the thing. Because the coming demand for CBD oil, the price of hemp has gone up. Now, so much that there is actually a shortage of seeds. So the initial farmers that they were talking about in this article in the Kansas City Star, they have an indoor hemp operation, and they are actually growing for seed. And they say, hold on to your hat, folks, some farmers have reported as much as $100,000 per acre from hemp for CBD oil.
There you go.
Okay, that's the shoot the moon. However, but there are still many questions because we haven't really grown hemp in this country. We used to grow hemp in this country, but we have not grown it for quite a long time. There are a lot of questions about the equipment that you need to do it and to produce it and harvest it. The main questions at this point are about banking and regulatory infrastructure.
Oh, for goodness.
Because you do not want to run afoul of the law. And the laws are, let me tell you, evolving is the word, really, really fast. So the article in the Kansas City Star had a quote from Senator Pat Roberts. He's the Republican from Kansas. He said, "It is not often that an almost entirely new crop with this level of interest comes along. The risks are the cost of seeds and getting the seeds has shot up. And since hemp derives from the same cannabis species as marijuana, but usually only contains a trace amount of the THC, the psychoactive mm-hmm. one, the problem is the government in whatever state you're living in is going to test your crop for THC content. If you have a crop or a seed germline that runs, as they call it, hot, the THC level may be above what is legally mm-hmm. permissible. And in that case, the state will force you to destroy your whole crop.
Oh, for goodness.
So, you got to know what you're doing. You're not going to just, you know, throw a few seeds in the ground and see what's going on.
So it's an important new crop.
It's a big an example they used in the article. So there's this sixth-generation farmer, Bobby Gabriel Jr., who is from Eudora, Kansas, which is northeast Kansas. He with his father and brother, farm 6,000 acres of corn and beans, right? Okay. So what he did this year, he's the example, he spent $200,000 on seeds to plant 80 acres of hemp. That's the largest volume that's allowable in the state program. But if it succeeds, young entrepreneurial Bobby expects to earn $5,000 to $20,000 per acre upon harvest, which should be coming up soon, September, mm-hmm. October. It's a fast-growing, quick plant. And by comparison, of course, he reminds you, with corn and beans, you can only get $500 to $1,000 per acre on a good year. So I suppose they figured that family figured, well, we got 6,000 acres. Let's take 80 and give this a try. And he did say in the article, because of the cost of the seeds, he had to get, you can't go to the bank and borrow on that.
Huh.
You know, so he had to like fundraise that initial cash, $20,000 to buy the seeds. So it's probably a wild gamble for a young farmer. But
that sounds like farming.
It does. So the possibilities, 42 states have approved industrial hemp programs. And this comes from the National Hemp Association. They're saying besides CBD, the applications include rope, fuel, socks, shower curtains, He says it's as strong as steel and can carry an electrical current. I mean, it could replace a lot of plastics in our.
Huh.
I mean, this is a real. I'm glad it's being, legalized and researched. It is a plant with an enormous amount of potential.
We can learn new things.
So the Kansas Department of Agriculture, as of this year, has tracked about 1,200 acres that they have approved for hemp. They've also, 90% of that is dedicated to producing CBD because that's the high market product. They have 207 growers, mostly out of doors. The state has also, this is Kansas. So we could, I'm not sure what the law is here, but this is, Missouri is going to do the same thing next year. But the state has also licensed 20 distributors and 34 processors and 9 state agricultural institutions. So that's a good way to begin the research on it.
I think so, too. Good idea.
Yeah.
A little news about hemp. We can learn to do new things. I want to take a little few minutes here to talk about dragons. I said we're going to talk about dragons.
There be
lots of dragonflies this year.
And aren't they cute and pretty?
I found out that there are lots and lots of different kinds, 5,000 known species of dragonflies, and they sort of get along with each other and sometimes migrate with each other. Dragonflies eat adult insects, huh?
They could have their fill of Japanese beetles,
I think that they're a little big. But mosquitoes, they love mosquitoes, and they have just been amazing this year.
Maybe they'll eat the chiggers.
Oh, I don't know. We should
some kind of ecological balance.
Very
Maybe
good.
We should go to the dragonfly lobby and make a suggestion. Do a little research on that one.
The flight of the dragonfly has been inspiring engineers and artists. I mean, dragonflies, they just fly.
Oh, and the way they hover.
Yeah. And nearly all the dragonfly's head is taken up with eyes. They can see like you wouldn't believe. That's how they get along. And they migrate long distances, too.
So, and what's that the name for the really skinny lady?
Mayflies?
No, there's another kind of thing that most people call a dragonfly that's really smaller. Didn't we talk about? Okay, never mind.
There's
lost
a whole
that
bunch
one.
Of them. Anyway, dragonflies, dragonflies. And
damselflies.
There we go.
I love all the names. Dragonflies, the damselflies.
And I want to mention the dragon tongue beans, which are a lovely, lovely wax beans. They're doing well this year. And I did a experiment with some dragon fruit. I talked about that on our last show. It's prickly pear cactus, and I made some fruit jam out of that. I must say, the jam is fine. It's kind of like you have to work around the prickers, the picklers, because these are cactus. These are cactus. But you kind of peel off things, and you boil that down. Okay, I screwed up, folks. I left the seeds in. The seeds are huge. The seeds are crunchy.
Well, yeah, they're very hard and crunchy. You know, it's not like a raspberry seed or tomato seed that you can kind of ignore.
So teach an Iowa girl about prickly pear.
Yeah, about cactuses. What do we know about cactuses?
But anyway, that is also called dragon fruit, so that's my little dragon report. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, and this is KHOI, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. There's a little tune called the Cincinnati Rag. I mentioned prickly pear cactus fruit jam, and we're going to be talking more about jam and jelly. This is from a past show from our vast archives for the Madonna Lana Kitchen. It's from a show 2015. We talked to Beth Wilbur, she and Donna and I just started talking about jam. She used to have.
We're big jam and jelly makers, and this is the season. We are preserving, conserving, freezing.
And trying new things.
Yeah.
Beth used to have a farm called the Jumping Bean Farm. She grew all sorts of vegetables and all sorts, but she has progressed. She has bloomed into Elizabella Flower Farms now, and you can find Beth at the Ames Farmers Market.
Yeah, and she also does weddings and occasions and beautiful, and she has honey.
Oh, yes.
Good honey.
So,
really yummy honey.
But anyway, let's see what we've got here. Let's go to this bit of audio. We're going to be talking about jams and jellies today. Welcome, Beth.
Ah, thank you. I'm really thrilled to be here. Thanks, Lana.
Good. Well, we're going to be talking about jams and jellies today, but that brings to mind all those other words we often hear. There's jam, jelly, preserves, conserves, marmalades, fruit butters, confitures, chutneys, sweet relish, all that good sweet stuff in jars. So, Donna, Beth, what's the difference between all of this stuff?
Well, there are culinary distinctions for all of these. Jelly, which is the most obvious one, is clear. And Lana is a very good jelly maker. Mostly you make jams,
yep,
don't you?
And
I do too make. Mm-hmm. So Lana's going to have to tell us about jellies. And then marmalades are usually citrus, don't you think? And they have peel in it.
Yes. They've got the stronger flavors. Yeah.
And we always use all three of us make marmalades. Love
right.
the marmalade.
I found a little note that marmalade is a French term. It doesn't necessarily mean citrus, but that's the general
well,
use
certainly
of it.
Certainly the English means
yes,
citrus
course,
when they make
citrus.
A marmalade.
But marmalade is just a French word for it's boiled down for a whole long time until it's gooey. That's the translation, I believe.
Well, and then there's butters. The most famous one, of course, is apple butter, which that, to me, is the boiled down. But it doesn't have chunks in it, so we'll talk about those. And those, I think, are the main distinctions.
Well, then there's chutneys and sweet relishes, which have other things in them, like vinegars and whatever. And
usually something savory, like an onion or...
Savories, yes.
Basil,
yep.
And, of course, we're kind of loose with these definitions here in our flavor. I think one thing that kind of we all three do a lot in our jam, jelly, confiture making is we really cross the genres and mix the flavors up.
Mm. Yes. So, Beth, what inspires you in your jam making?
I mean, when you look around at all the other foods we eat, I feel like that is what inspires me. Like I was telling Donna when I first got invited on the show that one of my best-selling jams at the farmer's market is a strawberry balsamic jam with black pepper. And that came about because my parents always tell the same story about their honeymoon that they took to Germany, that they got served white asparagus, and they'd never heard of that. And then after that, they got served fresh strawberries in a bowl with reduced balsamic vinegar and mm-hmm. black pepper cracked on top.
It's a classic.
Yeah, and so that became sort of, oh, well, if that works in a bowl, it would work in a jam. And people love it. It's so good.
Speaking of Germany, my first experience in Germany, which was probably about the same time as Beth's parents were getting married, was for breakfast, the Germans, a long time ago, and now more people do it, they serve bread, not with butter, but bread and cheese and jams for breakfast.
In Holland, I had bread with butter and chocolate sprinkles. Best breakfast ever.
I love that.
So good.
Well, actually, way back a couple of years ago, believe it or not, there's a recipe for a banana chocolate jam.
Huh.
Weird.
That is weird.
I can't even imagine it. How would you do it?
It's more like More like the kind of thing you'd put on...
Is it like Nutella or something?
Yeah,
kind
more,
of?
More like the thing you'd put on ice cream, I think. But mm-hmm. there it was. There, I think it was in...
Yeah, I've seen a recipe for monkey jam, which is banana jam, going around the internet. I don't know.
See, as venturesome as we are, here we yeah. are kind of snarling up our noses at it. Snarling up our noses. How long have you been making jams?
Since I first started farming, so 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, Beth is a youngin, but she's
I am.
She's prodigious already.
And your farm is called Jumping Bean Farm. Where's your farm?
My farm is northeast of Nevada, Iowa, so it's where I grew up, actually. It's my parents' homestead, their property. And so we've just kind of cordoned off two big gardens. So it seems a little pretentious to me to call it a farm. It's really just my family's garden that's gotten out of control.
But you do have a hoop house.
I do have a hoop house, so I guess that makes it a farm. No, it's a farm because I work at, like, a farm, so.
So one of the things that both Lana and Beth are notable for are their flavor combinations. So, mm-hmm. Beth, just reel off some of the flavor combinations that you sell at the farmer's market. And then, Lana, you do likewise.
It changes every year, and I do keep a few going. But blackberry jalapeno is a great one. I do a lot of hot jams. Habanero apricot is fabulous. Prosecco peach. That's a great one to make at home. Anybody can make that. Strawberry, aronia, gooseberry, raspberry. I call that my all Iowa berry jam.
Oh, I think anybody that uses aronia berries is very brave.
Oh, they're so good. They add like almost like a wine flavor. They're great. People don't even know that they love aronia berries.
And I would be one of them, right? I'll try it.
I do an onion basil apple. I do a caramel apple. I do an orange creamsicle. That one was inspired, actually, by the martini menu at London Underground. They have an orange creamsicle martini.
And what do you put in your orange creamsicle jam?
So it's orange juice and then vanilla beans and then vanilla rum. A little bit of alcohol goes a long way.
Uh-huh.
Really perks the flavors up. Uh-huh. And it tastes creamy. Like, when you taste it, you think...
Vanilla will do that. Yeah. It's wonderful.
A lot of vanilla beans.
Wow. So.
And then when I'm done with those vanilla beans and I put it in the rum bottle, and then it becomes the
vanilla rum.
Mm-hmm. So, and then when we were talking about marmalades, I was remembering my kumquat marmalade that I also put vanilla in. I like the vanilla with the citrus flavors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've never tried that.
Such a good
It's a classic.
Oh, it sounds good.
So good.
You know that Fiore di Tortilla, that flavoring that I use?
Oh, in a little vial that looks sort of...
And it smells like perfume.
It's from King Arthur. Mm-hmm. You can order it on their catalog. I'm guessing, but I'm sure it's citrus essence, oils, and vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. They just do something magical.
Oh. You mentioned hot things. Do you grow the peppers that you put in?
I used to, but I've become friends with the inspector at the farmer's market, and he told me that is not okay. But we can use dried peppers, but you need to purchase them. So you need to have – I have to bring my receipt for the dry – I know, it's so silly.
What? Purchase them?
Yes. They do not want me to dry my own peppers and then put them in the jam. I think they want proof that someone else in a – factory dried them? I don't know.
And these are dried peppers.
So dried peppers, yes. So I buy them at Penzies, and they have really great quality peppers and all sorts of different kinds. Mm-hmm. Donna turned me on to the Aleppo pepper.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, one of my favorites.
Good.
And the Penzi one is very, it's not too dried out. It's really good.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's still got a lot of oils in it.
You got to really get the good dried peppers. Mm-hmm. But so that's what I've switched to. And I used to make a carrot cake jam that was so popular, and they said no vegetables. They consider that a processed food, and I'd have to get a processing kitchen.
Mm-hmm. I've run across that too. Mm-hmm. Although it is called hot pepper jelly, and I love it, and I make it at home, I am not allowed to sell hot pepper jelly. Peppers are supposedly a vegetable, although it's fruit. It's like tomatoes.
Same thing.
So
and you can't
fussy,
sell tomato
fussy,
jam
no.
either.
Fussy.
I know.
Yeah.
Wow. And I shouldn't get too deep into this, but the inspector barely knew the rules. I had to really pursue. I had to email and call. I had to pursue this to be like, no, I need to make pepper jelly. They'll be knocking down my door if I don't. So
So you don't sell pepper jelly?
No, I sell the pepper jelly only made with the dried peppers.
Okay.
Because he said that is fine. And then if anyone asks, I have to be able to show them a receipt.
Basically.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All
and right. They told me that you can do herbs, but it has to be less than 10%. There's so many rules about selling.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm
glad they're keeping everyone safe.
Right. And there is a separate. Jams and jellies fall under a separate category for farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like an inspected kitchen, but there is we can talk about
there's
that.
There's legislation, yes.
Yeah. There oh of course it's legislation. That's fine. All right, here's some now if those taste combinations didn't tickle your funny bone, here's some of the stuff that I've been experimenting with. These are jams. Jams are chunky stuff. Rhubarb orange.
Oh, love that one.
Mm-hmm. Iowa apricot
with honey. I put the Fiore di Sicilia
in that,
was like knock your socks off with cheddar cheese.
With cheese. Iowa apricot with honey. Wild plum crazy and plum crazy. I call it crazy because whenever plum season is in, other stone fruits are there on my counter ripening, and I put in whatever stone fruit goes with the plums. Mainly plums, but there's always some other stuff in there. So wild plum and regular plum. Then ground cherry, I've done a really good pear balsamic spice. And I'm playing around with some onion marmalade. We'll talk about that later. And jellies. This year, I'm knee-deep in wild plum, basil, grape, actually two kinds of grape, wild and domestic, crabby elderberry, crab apple and elderberry, wild plum with basil. And I made a few experimental forays into a sour cherry jam and a sour cherry with currant. I always like to fuss with new things. So I don't know whether it's the taste, the names, or how this stuff looks on the shelf. It sure is pretty.
Well, Alana, since you're the jelly maker, you want to tell us, for example, how you make apple basil jelly?
All right, here's some basic stuff. There's a lot of ways to do this, but if you're new at jelly making, I'd suggest finding a box of pectin, as in Sure Gel, or one of those on the shelf. There's always instructions inside. Follow that. Do it fine. Pectin is not anything to be afraid of.
There's so many different kinds. It gets so confusing
right.
at the store.
And I'm finding each one acts a little differently, and I have to get my timing right. But if you follow exactly what the pectin jar tells you, you're pretty good. I'm notorious for not doing that. I'm a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Measure, Lana. Measure. Listen, measure.
Do you use Pomona's?
No, I wish I will start experimenting with that this winter. But I use the low sugar ball. I see a jar of it here on the table.
Oh,
but
you
use
that
the low
too.
Sugar. Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. That's the classic. So that's the one where it needs a certain amount of sugar to gel.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I use, the low sugar, mm-hmm. takes it actually gels with the calcium mm-hmm. in the fruit. So you don't need as much sugar mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. with other jam recipes. And I find that really makes all the difference. You use mm-hmm. good fruit, and you don't kill it with sugar, mm-hmm. and you're going to get a good product.
Oh, yeah. I have to say, I think the number one rule with jams or jellies is not to over... Mm-hmm. You want to get the flavor, not just the sweetness.
Exactly.
So back the sugar off. And use more fruit. That's what really makes a quality mm-hmm. product.
And that is one of the reasons for pectin. If you didn't use pectin, and if you want something to gel, which helps in the preserving process, you have to boil the dickens out of it. Boil, which affects the flavor and affects the color. And so that's why pectin is added. Pectin is a naturally occurring substance. It's called a polysaccharide. It's found naturally in berries, apples, and some other fruit. And it works with
mostly
sugar.
In the skin, right?
Of the apples,
for example?
As I understand it, I have made a natural pectin out of green apples. Green apples are thick in this stuff,
mm-hmm.
so you can use green apples as a thickening agent. effectively. I looked this up. You know, I want to sound like I made this up, but no, got this is from Wikipedia.
Right. This is science, guys.
pectin structure binds with water in an acid environment. Sugar increases pectin's ability to gel and affects texture and consistency of jellies and jams as they cool and set. Note, sugar is not the key to the preservation of the jam. A sterile environment and acidity are more important. That's another thing we're going to talk about, sterile environment. Learn to deal with hot things. So to make almost any jelly, let's just talk
this
about
this is not jam. This is jelly.
The clear stuff. One needs to extract juice from whatever, berry, apple, whatever. You would boil, steam the apples, the fruit, the apricots, the plums, whatever, in a pan of water, not too much. You don't need to cover it all away. Until everything is soft, the water and the juices are leaving the fruit. Put them in a jelly bag. Drip that jelly bag overnight. Collect the juice. Then you go on to your recipe.
Whoa. Let's talk about what a jelly bag is, what dripping a jelly bag is. You know,
all right.
Get graphic here.
All right. This is like alchemy, folks. You've got this big pot of glop on your stove. It's hot. It's steaming. Turn it off. Let it cool off a little bit. What I do is I get a jelly bag, which is a good quality cheesecloth, and you can find it
in
I double them.
Is it really a bag or it's just
no,
flat?
No, I just have a flat piece of cheesecloth, drape it over a big soup pot, actually, on my floor. On a rug on my floor.
Yes, on the floor, folks.
Because you're dealing with this hot big
it's
thing.
It's really hot. Yes. It bubbles, it burns.
Pour it in there. If you have another pair of hands to keep things from slopping all over, that's fine. Gather up the cheesecloth, tie it off, make a bag, hold it up, tie it off. Then I suspend a broom handle across the back of two chairs, tie it off on that broom handle, and it goes drip, 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 drip. Overnight, it cools off.
How come you don't do it in a colander? Why the bag, the broom handle?
In my experience, because I've tried little bunches in colanders, the colander holds the jelly to holds the
fruit.
The
gravity doesn't pull as much.
You want the weight of all the glop to push against the bag, and it really does pretty much drip well.
And it's the right weight, because if you push too hard on the bag, your jelly will be cloudy.
Right.
So, and I have a French jelly cloth that's made out of linen. So it's kind of like it's about the size of it's bigger than a tea towel and smaller than a barn. But it's linen, and it will last forever. And it's not a terribly loose weave, but I do the same thing that you do. I put it in something, pour the fruit into it, tie it up, and then there's all kinds of ways you can create to suspend it so that it drips. And overnight is about what it takes.
And you can definitely reuse your jelly bags. There are bags, too. But I don't know about you. You too, but I never ever use soap on the jelly bag because
I don't either. I just if
hot
it's
water,
really,
hot water,
or sometimes I even boil it in the hot water pan if it gets really grumpy,
fussy. You don't want any chance of soap.
No,
taste.
You don't want residue in your jelly bag.
So the next day, or whenever this juice is ready, I take 7 cups of that juice.
And you don't squeeze the jelly bag.
Don't squeeze it, because you want to have it nice and clear.
Right.
7 cups of juice. And then I put 9 cups of sugar. This is the recipe out of the sugar gel. This is just regular sugar gel, but the proportions would change if I was doing
7 cups
sugar.
Of the juice that's dripped through the jelly bag. Right.
And I put the sugar in another container ready to go. Bring that cup of 7 cups of juice to a boil. You can just make apple jelly out of this. That's fine.
When do you add the pectin? Is it later or is it now?
It's now.
Okay.
As you're bringing that to a boil, I sprinkle the pectin on the surface. Think of making jello. And stir it in. Then that has to come to a boil. Then you add the sugar. Bring that to a boil again. Learn what a full boil is. Mm-hmm. It has to be a full boil. And then after it comes to full boil, you can it. Now,
you want to visually describe a full boil for us?
I've been told that a full boil is when you stir with a spoon and the bubbles do not go away.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
That's it.
They keep coming. Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
it. Yeah. Now, before this, to infuse an apple jelly, which is what my basil jelly is, with basil, or I've done it with mint, I've done it with sage, mm-hmm. I've done it with rosemary. You can infuse.
Good.
You can infuse things before you put in the pectin. It's like you're making basil tea. Simmer, 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 put the basil in there.
So then you're leaving the basil bits in the jelly, floating in the clear jelly?
No, I've tried to do that, and it looks, although it may look romantically neat, I think it looks kind of icky by the time the jelly. So I strain all that stuff out and then add the pectin, do the jelly.
So you're not putting the basil in before it drips through the jelly bag?
No. No.
Ah,
no.
Comes in later.
Yeah. Then I can see how much
this is
it
complicated,
is.
Folks.
Yeah, it is. It mm-hmm. is, but it's fun.
It sounds more complicated than it is, I think.
Once
you get started, it makes perfect sense.
And also, this is a long-term thing. Be patient. You mm-hmm. you could have something else going on in your life mm-hmm. as you're doing this. Just be mindful of what's on the stove and learn how to deal with hot things. Why mm-hmm. don't you talk about jams and the jelly process and how you can these little suckers once you get them.
So once you're to the point where you've added the pectin, you've added the sugar, you've brought it back up to a boil.
No, wait, now we're back to
conserves,
marmalades, preserves.
Oh, you want me to do jam or should
jam,
I talk?
Jams.
Oh, okay. I thought you wanted to talk about
the
preserving
a little bit because now. Beth is going to talk about keeping all the chunks together, not mm-hmm. just the juice.
That's jam, basically.
Go for it.
My technique may be this is pretty self-taught, but I find it works really well if I start with frozen fruit. So my technique is in the summer, I gather as much fruit as I can and I freeze it. And I just freeze it in freezer bags, label it. I mean, who's got time to make? I don't have time to make jam when the blackberries are coming. I've got a million other things to do. So
you don't blanch or anything?
No, I just freeze
them. What do you do with the peach, for example?
I would just cut it into quarters, and I would lay it on a pan in my freezer, let it freeze solid.
Oh, in pieces, okay.
Yeah, in pieces. Yeah, mm-hmm. The smaller the pieces, the faster it'll freeze.
Peel on or peel off?
Peel on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm a big peel-on person.
Okay.
I hate to peel things.
It's so time-consuming.
Yeah. I'm just not that fussy. So that I would take out, say, my frozen peaches out of the freezer. And this can be in January. That's my favorite time to make jam, is in the winter. It's nice.
January.
January. Well done, Lana. I take the frozen peaches and I thaw them out and I'll put them in the pot. And with the low sugar pectin, the pectin actually goes in while the fruit is room temperature or cold. It doesn't go in while it's hot. So I measure out my fruit, I measure out my pectin, I stir it together, and then you bring that to a boil. And then it's pretty much the same process, and I add the sugar. So when the fruit is frozen, it breaks down. It breaks down better.
Good idea.
The other thing you can do is use a potato masher. I use my potato masher a lot because it gives it sort of a rough, like rustic kind of mash. You need to do something so you don't have just giant pieces of fruit floating in the sugar solution because that is no good on toast. That's really hard to deal with if you have, you know, a quarter piece of peach sitting on your toast. So you need to do something to break it down, but you do not want to use a food processor or a blender mm-hmm. because that actually decreases the pectin in the fruit. It breaks it down. And we want the pectin to help it gel and give it that beautiful texture that you want in jam. Is that a good explanation?
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
How do you deal with your chunks, Donna?
Well, I do a completely different method, but of course, I'm not selling mine in jars and mm-hmm. canning them off. I'm a big freezer person.
Mm-hmm. Freezer jam.
Even
good invention.
Even if I make it all the way through to the jam process, I put it in baggies and throw it in the freezer mm-hmm. just because I too lazy to can it. I mean, I used to do it. I used to even do the, does anybody do the wax on the top anymore? I used to do that.
Oh, I haven't. No, I haven't done that in ages.
You know, it's paraffin. So
paraffin,
it's it's a petroleum product. So I stopped doing it. But that was, someday I want to try it with beeswax on the top. But that's a good storage method. But what I do is, when it's in season and there's lots of it, whether it's apples or berries or, I do currants a lot because I love black currants. And I just put them in a thick bottom pan, boil them down till they're cooked, which often isn't very long. And then I have a thing that was my mother's. Now, I don't know whether we call it a ricer or a food mill or a, but it's a big metal conical thing that has a stand, and then it has a wooden mallet that fits in it that rolls around and presses all of the stuff that you want in the jam through. I like it because you can use the apples. You don't have to cut the seeds out or anything. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, then you just throw away what's left inside the cone. And then either I will then put that back in and sweeten it, or else sometimes I just freeze it up and, like you, make it later. But I usually put it through that process when it's still in season. I do it with elderberries. That's kind of how. And I don't use pectin. I'm really lazy about that. Mm-hmm. One of my cheap trick, guys, is if it's not thick enough and I want it for some dinner or something, I put a little cornstarch in it.
So you're making a jam pudding.
Kind of. Yeah, that's what I use as a thickener.
Sure. Now, because it's for immediate consumption.
Yeah. So it'll keep in the fridge long enough to eat the jar. I mean, a couple of weeks or something. But it's really fast. It's really easy.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was some adventures. Jam and jelly.
A lot of
with
jam Beth. Tricks.
Jam tricks.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Find out more at khoifm.org. You can find the Donna Lana Kitchen website there. Thanks to Gail for keeping our website up to snuff. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. So we've got some events coming up. Donna, tell us about
Egg Art. We got a really good event coming up this Sunday, just north of Ames. And I'm going to give you this address because it's out in the country and it's kind of hard to find. It's right on the Skunk River. The address is 56676 160th Street. And that is the bread and breakfast, Loya's little farmhouse with Dean and Denise Beekler. But what we're going to be doing there, this is a Friends of PFI Field Day, and it's sponsored by an organization which Lana and I are both members of called Ag Arts. It's about arts from our communities, right, our agricultural communities. And so Mary Swander, who was the former Iowa Poet Laureate, is the main founder. And one reason this is going to be a great field day is we are having a live performance of a play that she has written. It's a one-woman show. It is a professionally the actress is coming. I mean, it's not just a this is not some hokey, low, small-town show.
It's high-end
It's
stuff.
A high-end. It's going to be a very good performance. The play is called Map of My Kingdom, And it is it explores the issues surrounding farmland transition. You know, who gets the farm when mom and dad die? And this is a very complicated question in Iowa. And the play, I have to say, it's one of, I think, Mary's finest pieces. It is a beautiful piece of writing. It's Gaelic. It's funny. It's just all over the place. It's more than an hour, I think. I've forgotten how long it goes. It's really, really good. So this is open to the public. It is free of charge. So we'll be doing that. We will also be doing a potluck where I will be cooking a whole mess of local pulled pork. So in the potluck, just bring, you know, some salad or a side dish, and we'll provide the pork, and I'm going to make some tea or beverage or something. And then also there are many other articles. Now, Dean and Denise Beekler, Dean is a really fine visual artist here. He was on the faculty for many years at ISU as the vet med and I think horticulture illustrator. So his work is fabulous. I love it. And at their bed and breakfast, they also have a collection of other Iowa artists. So there are many different kinds of paintings and different art on display. And there'll be some other storytelling things and activities. And, you know, if the weather is good, it's a beautiful setting. So the address, once again, is 55676 106th Street.
Or go to Practical Farmers of Iowa.
It'll be listed
for
under
more
their friendship. Or Ag Arts has a website that will have the address on it as well. So, and it's got some nice local sponsors. It should be a lovely day, a fine group of people. And this play is really spectacular. If you have not seen it, please, it's been performed around the state, actually around the country, because we have a lot of old farmers in this country, and it's a big generational change, and huge amounts of land over the next 10 years will change hands. And with land values the way they are, it's really contentious. It's very divisive for many families. And PFI is an organization who commissioned this play originally, has been helping farmers deal and farming families deal with this issue. So, and the play it's wonderful. It is a joy to watch, even if you don't have a farm to pass on. So that is coming right up this Sunday, and Lana and I will both be there.
We will.
Come on out and introduce yourselves to us.
That would be fun.
It starts at noon, with the lunch at noon.
All right. Great. So contact Practical Farmers of Iowa for more information, or Ag Arts.
It's sort of due east of Gilbert, right on the Skunk River.
You'll find it.
Yeah.
It'll be good. All right. Then we have a few more upcomings. The Wheatsfield Co-op. They have a local foods potluck every year, and that's Saturday, August 24th at Brookside Park at Maple Shelter. And also that evening, Central Iowa Barn Dance starts again for another whole series, August 27th at 130 South Sheldon Avenue in Ames. Just turn south, one block south of Dunkin' Donuts off of Lincoln Way. Everyone knows who Dunkin' Donuts are. That's find out more. Central Iowa Barn Dance is a good Facebook that you can look up there.
Yeah, right. We're going to have a busy social weekend, aren't we?
Well, we are.
This is a summer harvest time. Here we go.
Eat, dance, plays, food. Oh, very
art,
good.
Nature, the whole thing.
Thanks for joining us today. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. You can find us here live at noon every Tuesday at khoifm.org. And you can also at that address stream us, find out archives, and find out more about us. Today we talked about hemp and dragons and jam and jelly and Map of My Kingdom. We had music, contra dance music, by George Pank, Clyde Curley, and Susan Songer. You've heard the Cincinnati Rag, Green Apple Quick Step, and we'll end up with something called Pigeon on a Gate. Why not? My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had fine engineering by Cynthia McClure. Eat good food and enjoy life.